I'm so excited to welcome our next guest. Dr. Zaid Ratansi, known as Dr. Z to his patients and colleagues, is a licensed naturopathic physician and global authority on hyperbaric, biooxidative, and environmental medicine, as well as low-level light and chelation therapies. He is a trainer for hyperbaric oxygen therapy and has an IHA-approved education and training course for safety and operation. And he has established and manages a research-based website for hyperbaric therapy at hyperbaricexperts.com. Dr. Z also worked with boxing legend Muhammad Ali to help him fight Parkinson's disease. He serves as an advisor to athletic trainers, team doctors, and practitioners, and elite athletes to help them implement personalized protocols for performance training and recovery. He also has extensive training in environmental medicine and has helped implement safe detoxification and cleansing programs along with hyperbaric oxygen therapy within the spa industry, helping to advance medical spas throughout the world. Dr. Z, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the introduction.
Well, as we were chatting a little bit beforehand, you told me that you had been into hyperbaric oxygen for over 20 years. So I'm curious how you kind of made your way into this industry, because, you know, 23 years ago or so, wasn't a big thing.
No. Actually, it was quite interesting. I went to a medical conference in my last year of medical school in naturopathic medicine and, you know, trying to figure out what I was going to do, and went to a conference that all the best doctors in my field go to, because I wanted to go and see what are they doing on their continuing education for therapeutic interventions at conferences. And there's one conference or one lecture on hyperbaric and wound care. And I saw the science, I saw the research, and I saw the application, and I saw what it can do. And then I asked the question, where I haven't learned about these chambers for wound care, and where are they? And in Canada, where I started my practice, where I was going, I did my university in Washington State and then went up to Canada to practice. And there's only 9 hyperbaric chambers, and they're in hospitals. And so there wasn't any hyperbarics. And so I said, well, this is a good thing to do. And so I started with a group of individuals, the first private multiplace hyperbaric chamber in Canada for private use. And within 3 days of opening, we had a 9-month waiting list. And we had about 5 hotels contract out 1 month stays for people coming in for hyperbaric. And who were these people? They were kids with their parents coming in for cerebral palsy. They were stroke victims, there were head injuries, brain injuries. And it sort of made sense to me when I started, because wound care, we think wound care, and it works, it can help wound care that much. And then what about the brain and the brain wound? So it became really, really my first, I would say, 6 months into practice, I saw things that really changed the trajectory of where I was moving towards into my practice. And I went full on into really helping with hyperbaric oxygen gain access worldwide. But in that time, people were flying in and they were saying, why can't I get something around me? It was all about access. And I remember doing a talk, and there was about 3,000 people. And how many people have heard about hyperbaric oxygen? They wanted me to talk about hyperbaric. And I had a handful of hands go up. It just wasn't really known at that time. And I'm seeing the potential benefits. So that's really what got me started. And that first 6 months of seeing what I saw of patients in comas that were getting recovery, kids with cerebral palsy that were regaining strengths and muscle coordination. And there was something going on. So then slowly and slowly, more and more science and research and application started getting into hyperbaric. And then there became a hyperbaric movement not long ago. In the past 10 years, you're seeing more and more. Now I do a talk and almost all hands go up on who's heard of hyperbarics.
Yeah, it's interesting. I as a former athlete in college, fairly high level athlete, I remember seeing hyperbaric oxygen used in the athletic world, right? Particularly, I think in the NFL is when I first heard about it, is these high level elite NFL guys having these chambers at home that they would go, you know, essentially sleep in, right? And take naps in and these type of things. And so that's kind of how I got introduced to it. And then as I got into studying, you know, naturopathic medicine and integrative medicine, functional medicine, Ayurvedic, there is this interesting balance where, you know, we want to use nature's principles and use nature's substances and work with the natural principles, natural cycles, right? And then we come up with these things like hyperbaric oxygen, which is almost on the complete end of the spectrum, so to speak, in the sense that it's artificial, and yet we're still coupling it with natural principles in the body, right? And so it's a really fascinating kind of time that we're in. And I think there's a ton of opportunity with the sort of regenerative medicine kind of movement that we're seeing with all kinds of new therapies that are coming online, coupling that with fundamental principles, you know, from naturopathic medicine, Ayurveda, and these type of things. To me, it's like a super exciting time to couple these things together. And I'm curious how you kind of go about doing that when you're working with, you know, any kind of head injuries or neurological symptoms, anybody that comes in, you know, how are you using these sort of in conjunction with one another?
Well, excellent question. I'm glad you said that, because we have to think of other disciplines. Oxygen is helping to combust carbon in food for cellular energy, but you still need. Think about it as a car. You could gas up a car. That's great, but you still need a motor, and you still need mechanics. You still, there's a system. But why I'm so passionate about hyperbaric oxygen is because every cell is metabolically active that utilizes oxygen. So take your discipline, take Ayurvedic, take any discipline, take oncology, take cardiology, take physical medicine, physical therapy, sports trainers. Any profession relies on metabolic activity, right? And oxygen dependent. Ophthalmology, oxygen dependent. So if we understand oxygen physiology, and then dose a surplus of oxygen alongside complementary therapy. So if we can really train practitioners well on hyperbaric physiology, and then they use that application. Now, take neurology, for instance, seeing that you asked the question of neurology, and I started in that field. The brain itself, let's say the brain takes up 25% of your oxygen right now. Now, that is normal. And think about the brain. It only weighs about 3% of your body weight. So an organ that weighs 3% of your body weight consumes a quarter of the oxygen that gets into your blood from your lungs, 25%. And because the brain is so metabolically active, we need oxygen, right? And so when we're in hyperbaric physiology, the application of hyperbaric is you're inside a chamber and you're just getting more oxygen. But, you know, the best way I could call it is a glorified oxygen supplement. What you're doing is you're dosing more oxygen into the blood. But what's interesting with this dose, the oxygen doesn't go, that surplus of oxygen when you're in the chamber, doesn't go onto red blood cells like normal delivery. You'll get some extra, but the extra dose, it's a gas pressure law of physics. It's a Henry's law of physics. It's an absolute law. More pressure, more oxygen in liquid. That's the liquid that the red blood cells are going in. So if you take blood and you centrifuge, spin it in a laboratory, you'll see all the red blood cells go down, and then there's about 2/3 of liquid. It's called plasma. So all that oxygen is going in a free form in liquid. Well, the brain is bathed by liquid, cerebrospinal fluid. So all of a sudden you're in the chamber and your heart beats, and then it beats again and it beats again, let's say 60 times in a minute. That's 60 dosages of extra oxygen and liquid that now get into the liquid surrounding the brain and into the fatty tissue of the brain. Now the brain gets extra oxygen and extra energy. Okay, oxygen, energy. Don't breathe for 5 minutes, not much energy. So you're energizing the brain. And just like when we're treating wounds and we're doing wound care, you're creating more oxygen and cellular energy to where the wound is. And if you cut your skin, skin heals. The body knows, has an innate ability to heal, but we're oxygen dependent, energy dependent. So all we're doing is saying, hey, we're going to give more oxygen and we're going to have the brain treat itself. And that's what we really saw when we're looking at brain injuries starting off. But then you start seeing what is the mechanism of action, and what we found, some of the key mechanism of action for the brain is when you get that surplus of oxygen, within 24 hours, we get a response, a protection of the brain. So there's an upregulation because now there's no more metabolism. So within the brain cells itself, you start getting more, not only metabolic activity, that's great, that's function, but you get more protection. It's called endogenous antioxidants. So you're protecting the brain. Some of these enzymes are glutathione peroxidase, catalase, superoxide dismutase. And what's happening is because you're getting more combustion and you're getting more protection. Think of it like back when I gave you that analogy of the car and you put gas in a car, you get, you get combustion, but you get exhaust, right? So you need to have more exhaust, an exhaust system. If you don't use a car for a while, it might not have that all going. So now what you're doing is you're peaking the cells back into metabolism, and then all of a sudden the exhaust system comes, but it's inside every cell because you have to protect the fragile DNA. And that's why every cell has its own antioxidant species that we make. We don't take it in pills. We absolutely have it. And it's oxygen and oxygenation that causes that reaction. And now the brain is protected. The second protection that happens is with something that you'll see in the brain called inflammation. In the brain, we call it neuroinflammation. So just think if you hurt your wrist or something, you might have a little fluid, or you might have heard of people being just chronically inflamed, right, from injuries. Well, the same thing is the brain can have inflammation. It's actually quite common, especially in neurodevelopmental disorders, neurodegenerative conditions, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and then neurological insults like head injuries, inflammation. So there is those two happen quite quickly. But then one of the most powerful things that we see in hyperbaric delivery for the brain is we will get stem cells, bone marrow derived stem cells, that now the body is in energy mode. So we start creating brand new cells. Okay. Stem cell mobilization is what it's called. One study where they applied hyperbaric oxygen at 2 atmospheres caused an 800% increase in stem cell mobilization. This was in 2006. That was a landmark study. That is what really made us look and say, hey, there's a whole other mechanism of hyperbaric oxygen therapy. But then we didn't think it went to the brain, right? But then they started tagging and they looked, hey, where are these stem cells going? And they found to the brain. It's called neurogenesis. Neurogenesis, genesis, the new formation, of brain cells. So the application of hyperbaric started helping for this process of repairing new brain cells, and then something called angiogenesis, new circulatory pathways to damaged parts of the brain. And now we can understand a lot better of the influence of hyperbaric oxygen for neurological injuries and recovery programs.
Well, you're getting down to the core, I think, of really a lot of disease processes, particularly chronic disease, right? When we get down to inside the cell and in metabolically active organs like the brain, the heart, the liver, the kidneys, we got a ton of mitochondria, right? And these are what we call the powerhouse of the cell, but they do so much more, right? They produce hormones, they clean things up, they recycle, they produce, as you mentioned, antioxidant defense systems, right? So there's so much going on at that mitochondria level. And I'm curious if, you know, you hit on something really important, I think, which I think was my initial introduction to the physiology, which was that there's this sort of functional hypoxia, right? There's a lack of oxygen at the cellular level. And while we might not call it, you know, hypoxia in broad terms, it's functionally hypoxic. There's not enough sort of oxygen and sort of that electron transport chain inside the mitochondria is not really churning optimally. So when we kind of get oxygen, more perfusion into those tissues, then we're going to get these sort of this good thing happening, right? More energy production in the form of ATP. We're going to get less reactive oxygen species. Perhaps we're going to get antioxidant defense systems turning on. You know, there's the cells are going to be cleaning up, but this is really fascinating what you're talking about here with stem cells, because this is kind of next level stuff that I think it seems like we're starting to run into, is some of these sort of, you know, secondary or tertiary effects that we weren't fully aware of. And now I think with stem cells kind of taking a big forefront in regenerative medicine, we're starting to kind of, our lenses are starting to change with regard to stem cells, right? And so I'm curious, what other kind of things are we figuring out that hyperbaric oxygen is really able to do for us?
Well, it's in the hyperbaric doesn't do any, the hyperbaric allows the body to do for itself at its peak performance. You know, when you talked about mitochondria, what we see is something called mitochondrial biogenesis. Right. And what that means is more of these powerhouses within each cell. Well, yeah, hey, if I'm in spending mode because I got lots of energy, physiological energy, real energy for the cell, I'm gonna create more mitochondria, and it's gonna be this vicious cycle of energy. Right. And I think one of the biggest is that cardiovascular. You know, I can tell you, aging is really a disease as we look at it. The blood vessels start narrowing, and we slow down. This happens at birth, at 5 years of age. We start seeing fatty streaks, inflammation in the arteries. By adolescence, you'll see that. Normal. You know, it's normal to have arteries that are calcified and have plaque in them. And some people are 30% blocked here, 80%, 90%, 100%. And they're walking around. Why? Because the human body is so resilient. And that, when you talked about that hypoxia, you know what's fascinating? The body's defense to hypoxia is angiogenesis, create new blood vessels. Okay, think about that. My analogy is very simple to LA traffic, right? So, you know, when roads were first put in, 5 lanes, 10 lanes, no problem. These kids that are 5 years of age, there's 10 lanes going to the brain. Right? There's no problem at all with oxygen or energy, cellular, right? There's no blockage. There's no restriction. As we start aging, 8 lanes, 6 lanes, 2 lanes, there's highway disease everywhere. And naturally, take anyone who has never been in a hyperbaric chamber and ask any cardiologist, and what you'll see is you'll start seeing angiogenesis. It's the body's way of, hey, you know what, but we're budgeted, just like every county says, well, we got to build a new road, but We only have a certain amount of money, you know? So there's a little budget on that. And so what happens is, so the stimulus is hypoxia. But when you get hyperoxia, when you go into the hyperbaric chamber, what do? You get extra energy. So now you got the budget. So you start, so you want to go what we call relative hypoxia and then hyperoxia. So you get this stimulus of, I want to, it's called vascular endothelial growth factor, new growth factors being produced. And the that surplus of oxygen and energy with the hyperbaric. So that's why typically hyperbaric is dosed in very short periods of time, but repetition, frequency. Just like if I'm taking a course of antibiotics, I'm going to do it regularly for a short period of time. So we call it repetitive hyperbaric therapy. And typically, a lot of times we'll see, remember that program I told you when I first started, we did this 1 month protocol where patients came in, and in 1 month we saw a lot of stuff going on. That was daily sessions for a month, twice a day, and that's it. And just a really high influence of high and low and high and low, and really getting a lot of physiological support and change for the body.
You know, there's something called hormetic stress, right? And this is something that anybody that exercises, right? You yes. exercise, and then the body, and look, the body is constantly, it's an open system, right? So it's constantly picking up energetic signals, be they thoughts or emotions or physical signals, or whatever the case is. In this case, oxygen, right? A relatively heavy dose of oxygen. So the body is going to receive this signal, and it's going to respond accordingly, right? And that yes. seems like what you're doing is you're just repeating this sort of hormetic stress, and the body's then adapting to this new signal in a way that, of course, it knows how to do. And what you see is increased function over time.
Exactly. So what happened with the aging and the degeneration is adaptation towards disease. We're right. changing. You get short intermittent bouts of oxygen, and what you're doing is you're stressing and adapt to stress it, but on a way to support physiological health and wellness within the human tissue and cells.
And you're doing so at the sort of micro level, right? That's what's so yeah. cool. You know, again, if we were to take something like sunlight, right, or exercise, these are probably some of the most prominent hormetic stressors and everybody's different, right? This is what's interesting, right? It's sunlight, you and me, very different in the sunlight, right? It's not gonna take me much before I reach my limit. And then I've gotta let my skin, my body sort of recover. And if I go too hard, I could actually tip over into sort of negative consequences as a result. Same thing with exercise, right? I can push myself too yep. hard and do things too often. And if I don't give myself enough recovery time, which may be different for each individual, right? It may be different for me at 18 versus me at 60, right? Then, so this is kind of this individuation that happens. And so I'm curious how you're using that with your patients. If there's sort of a feel that you get as an experienced practitioner, or if there's protocols, depending on what you see walking your door.
Good question. I think it's, we start off with protocols, and then there's always personalization. And, you know, some people might feel, you know, after doing some sessions, they get more fatigue. Then, hey, let's change that at nighttime. Hey, why don't we double dose in a day? Why don't we just do one session a day, 75 minutes, 90 minutes, 60. But you know what? There's standard, just like you're taking any standard medication. So there's standard protocols that we have in hyperbaric delivery. I try to stick to standard because I follow the research, and, you know, we want to replicate the research. Hyperbaric is not FDA cleared for treating any of these conditions. So the way that I look at it is just health and support, physiological dose of extra oxygen, and protocol based that allow patients to respond to exactly what you said, health and wellness, right? So it's just going the other way. Think about what we talked about, regeneration. What happens as we age? Degeneration, chronic degenerative diseases, osteoarthritis, degenerative disc disease, degenerative eyes, macular degeneration, aging, blood flow, oxygen. So we get low oxygen, low blood flow. And a lot of people say, oh, it's the air that we breathe. Well, no, I'm still at 97, 98, 99% on my pulse ox. This system of lungs is great. It's just when the heart pumps it, there's resistance. Blood pressure goes up. There's all this blood vessels, the microcirculation, diabetes, blood sugars basically spill into the small blood vessels, cause small blood vessel disease, and now you're damaging blood flow. And cardiovascular, one of the number one killers. But the way I look at it is I don't think about that. I think, what about the degree of debility that it causes? If, you know, it might not have, who knows? What's one of the first signs? Is a heart attack. You're going to wait for a sign. So, you know, and so that's why this holistic application of hyperbaric, where it's not selective to any part of the body, it's the whole body. But as you improve blood flow, what happens is the brain gets the recipient of it. So after a month of doing some of these standard protocols, now we can have better oxygenation. It's not going to take any plaque out, right? But having more blood flow to organs and organ systems. And so, you know, that's why when we talked about the benefits of hyperbaric for the brain, the immediate effects, yes, but the long-term effects. And then you think, how many people are around dangerous, harmful chemicals, either in their workplace or home place environment? These are called neurotoxins. And you could smell it. It goes into the roof of the palate. You get these metals, mercury, lead. And what do? They damage the brain. They cause oxidation. So if you precondition your brain with hyperbaric, you're more protected. Not that you want to go and do hyperbaric so you can go into a toxic, fumed environment, you know. But in today's society, we could be more protected. You know, you talk about more protection. I do a lot of concussion treatments with hyperbaric, and we do preconditioning, right? People who are at high risk, football players who are maybe already had a previous concussion, or any contact sport where the head can be involved. We like preconditioning before the game, right? To help that brain be stronger for protection. And so that inflammation and oxidation, that protection is very important in the long-term scheme of things. And sometimes the neurological issues that are going on are from environmental, what we call neurotoxins, that get into the brain.
Well, anytime you can increase function of the brain and increase oxygenation, you're increasing neurogenesis, right? You're going to start to increase, hopefully, glymphatic clearance, right? So you're starting to clear these toxins out of the brain. You know, you're shutting down neuroinflammation.
Yes, good.
Right? Like shutting down neuroinflammation is huge, right? I mean, especially with some of the glial cells that can essentially get stuck on, so to speak, right? Like, I mean, this is a major issue with a lot of people that experience all kinds of neurological symptoms and conditions. You mentioned concussions, and I'm curious if there's any neurological condition or brain related issue that you've seen that hyperbaric oxygen does not work well with, or that you need to be particularly cautious when you approach it.
That's a very good question. There is so if somebody has seizure activity, you want to be careful of what we call oxygen toxicity seizure. Hyperbaric can't cause epilepsy, but it can induce a oxygen toxic seizure. But that's when we dose it really high. We try to stay below that threshold, and we have standard routine applications to help do that. Sometimes someone has carbon monoxide poisoning, and it's life-threatening and they need to be at a very high dose, then we take precautions for that. And sometimes there are risks that are associated with that. I tend to recommend lower dose because the brain doesn't need much. It's already so oxygen dependent, and that physiology is in the liquid. Hey, they've done head-to-head studies on very low pressure compared to higher pressure, and seen in a similar outcome in studies in cerebral palsy. They did a study, the University of Wisconsin, just recently. I don't know if it's published yet, but they found just a low pressure, not even putting on a mask, just air, had a tripling effect after just one session of stem cell mobilization. Is that interesting?
So yeah, talk to me about that. And it's, I guess it's sort of in the name, but it may not be fully recognized by all those who aren't familiar with hyperbaric oxygen. In most cases, you have a chamber that you're increasing the pressure, right? The atmospheric pressure in. And so yes. Talk to me about that pressure and how that works with oxygen. And I guess in that tank too, is it a higher percentage of oxygen in the air, in the atmosphere, or is it standard air that we're working with?
Excellent, excellent question. In traditional hyperbaric, you know, when hyperbaric first got discovered in 1662, what you're doing is you're dosing pressure and you're dosing oxygen. Okay, so two drugs, extra oxygen by a mask, or in hospitals we put a hood. Some wound care centers just have the whole chamber pressurized with just oxygen, and so they don't have any breathing apparatus. And remember, the pressure is the big thing that causes more oxygen to dissolve in the body. But now you add more oxygen in your breathing apparatus, because this is the only place you need it. You don't get oxygen in your skin. You can't drink it. You can't eat it. You can't bathe in it. You have to breathe it. So just making sure this area has that surplus of oxygen, that's traditional. What was found when they started doing studies and comparing a placebo to hyperbaric, they didn't see any, they saw both groups getting improvements. But the problem was the placebo was a pretty decent amount of pressure. So you're getting a physiological response. You're getting more oxygen. You're getting more drug. And so it then led us to say, well, why are we doing this dose if we could have just pressure and air, right? So there's two trains of thought. And you're saying, okay, if you want to have that pressure and air, is there any harm to adding the extra oxygen? And if there's not, then we add it in, right? And because we have an understanding that that will increase the dose. But we still don't have really good data on head-to-head to show if one is more better than the other. It's thought by a lot of people that, okay, I'm going to do a higher pressure. I'm going to get a bigger dose, so I'm going to get better results. You know, it's a difficult one because yeah, I could give a medication, 25 milligrams of prednisone. I could give 50 milligrams of prednisone, and they could both give benefit to the patient. But one is just double the dose. Do I need it? You know, so it's understanding. And I think understanding how much oxygen you're getting from being even at a low pressure, because the dosage is every time your heart beats, it's this extra you would not have. And it starts accumulating. So you get such a high of an essential nutrient. It doesn't get wasted. That extra doesn't just go. It gets utilized for combustion with carbon for energy. What is it energizing? I don't know. Everybody's different. You know, I like to think of it like when you're in the chamber, it's a buffet, right? For every cell just says, hey, I got a buffet. I'm going to take more. You don't need more. You might not take more, right? But so you're allowing this extra dose and giving that body and every tissue, every organ system, the immune system is dependent on oxygen, stronger immune system. So I tend to keep it more simple.
Yeah, I like that approach. And it seems to me that the consistency is really maybe perhaps the biggest key in this whole game. And so talk to me about some of these things that you're seeing in terms of neurological conditions, brain-related conditions that you're treating. How long of a protocol do you typically see with some of the most common conditions that walk in your door?
It varies, sometimes just 3 to 5 sessions. I typically call that a jump start, you know. I might do that preconditioning, like I told you, those preconditioning studies, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or in the case of some of the football players, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and then they play on Sunday. You could do a pre-surgery. We're finding like neurosurgery, if we know someone's going in for brain surgery, just getting 5 sessions before the surgery. Sometimes it's not applicable because there's no time, because it's an emergency procedure sometimes. Right? But if it's a planned procedure, then we like doing just 5 sessions or so. And then after the surgery, there's another maybe 5 sessions, 3 to 5 sessions. We have sometimes 10 sessions if there's an acute injury, 20 sessions. Protocols if we need a little more of that angiogenesis, the regeneration. The gold standard, like I tend to say, taking a course of antibiotics, you know, is this 40 session protocol. It's what we've seen the most results. And some people say, hey, I feel great in, you know, 18. All right. I had one guy, he had homogeneous hemianopsia. He had a stroke and he just had central vision. He lost his peripheral and he so he was very depressed, went into this chamber. And after his second session, he had a significant increase in his visual perception. And then third was even more. And he had this small black spot on his upper left quadrant, just a small spot. And then he did 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then at 17, and he was scheduled for a course of 40. At 17, he said to me, I don't want to do anymore. So, okay. And he said, why? He goes, well, I could live with a small spot. I got back my driver's license. That's all I cared about. And, you know, at the end of the day, the time and the finance at the time, you know, now it's a little more cost effective, but back before it was quite a budget for, you know, you got caregivers and stuff. So, you know, you'll find that we'll tend to apply the older, the sicker, the more I want to really help support the body, the more I'll just write a script for 40 sessions as standard protocol, and then maybe do some internal adjustments. Do a lot of light therapy, transcranial over the forehead or a brain, where we can get certain wavelengths to increase cellular energy in the brain and blood flow. So there's a tagging effect. We call it targeted hyperbaric. That's done a lot. In the chamber, I can't tell the oxygen will just go here or go here. So we can help. And then if they have some type of so after about 2 weeks, we might then start doing some exercises, cognitive exercises of frontal lobe for executive functioning. Then we'll have them do some memory exercises while they have the light on there in the chamber. So exercise while that. So we're trying to build these tracks, or where if it's motor control, fine or gross motor, then we'll do those exercises, right? So it's and that's when we first started talking about hyperbaric. And you said about the various practitioners and you mentioned one, I think Ayurvedic, but physicians, practitioners who are knowledgeable in their skills, whether it's a functional therapy where you can then utilize that for full wellness within that.
Yeah, I'm curious with cognitive decline, whether it be, you know, full blown sort of dementia and
yes,
Alzheimer's early stages. I'm curious if you've seen any positive yes, impacts. I mean, I think that you're starting to see that early cognitive decline where the handwriting's starting to go, where the gait is starting to go, these types of things. It seems like a really good opportunity as you start to notice it early, but you're seeing even later stage stuff and
both
there.
Wow. Yeah. So we see the early, originally we wanted it. The research was pretty strong on reducing the progression. I thought, hey, if we could just reduce the progression, that's a treatment.
You mean, and by that you mean kind of slow it down. So it's
correct.
Not progressing so fast.
Correct. Right? But then we started seeing improvements as well, which is cool,
And it's kind of others reversal, right?
Yeah. And you know what? So now there's really good studies on mild cognitive decline and cognitive impairment, right? And on Alzheimer's. Now, when I started, I had some really good cases on vascular Alzheimer's, and sometimes it's not diagnosed as vascular. And we have some really good ones. Well, vascular, of course, blood flow. But there's the latest research really got me excited on amyloid plaques, where the application of hyperbaric reduced the amyloid plaque buildup. And so now we're looking at, hey, and a lot of it has to do with that reduction of neuroinflammmation, reduction of hypoxia, low oxygen, and just fueling the cells, mm-hmm. fueling the brain and letting the brain treat itself, right? And you can throw a rock at a window or a door, like you can effectively damage here for Alzheimer's and here for Parkinson's and here for MS. And the brain is only so big. And what's the damage? Everyone is different. But what do we know is, how do we repair? How do we functionally help the brain repair itself? And I think if we take that approach of helping the brain repair itself, giving the fuel, the nutrients, and definitely nutritional therapy, fatty acids. The brain is made up of 60% fat. And so some of these fatty acids are very important. And also for what we call nerve growth factor, there's excellent studies on BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, with hyperbaric influence. So we're actually getting so many of these mechanisms of actions we're understanding of potentially how this application of hyperbaric can help the brain. But that's just one area. Then we have other therapists and other interventions that can be added in, because no matter who they are, if they're a neuropsychologist, anyone that is treating the brain or any organ metabolically active, if there's no oxygen in what they're treating, the brain isn't working, right? Yeah. So really understanding the application of hyperbaric physiologically, and then having application of that. So, and that's one of the things that we do training in the for practitioners, is how to integrate hyperbaric within the practice, and so make it a tool for application for patients.
Yeah, I can really see the benefits of stacking this with other therapies and lifestyle interventions, right? I mean, we know that going out in nature increases BDNF and increases all the feel-good hormones, neurohormones in the brain, right? All the neurotransmitters, as well as exercise, right? Same thing. So when we're starting to stack and change our lifestyle, increase more exercise, increase the sunlight, right? And setting that circadian rhythm in the brain, getting all the neurohormones and circadian rhythm physiology in line with nature, hanging out with friends, right? And being around loved ones, having that support, all these sort of little things that we may not be keenly aware of, and starting to change those. And of course, with diet, as you mentioned, and fatty acids and getting the right amino acids. And all of a sudden, we're stacking things in our favor to such a large degree. And again, this is where I see, as much as we like to talk about individual therapies and really dig into those a little bit and find the nuances and the benefits. It's all of a sudden when we start to stack all these things, right? And it's like, holy smokes, this is how we go from cognitive decline to turning back the clock 15, 20 years neurocognitively. And it's like, wow, that's the opportunity, right? There's one thing I want to ask you. You know, there's a lot of therapies that we can do remotely now, right? I mean, we're having this call remotely. Technology is fantastic. Hyperbaric oxygen is not really one of those that we can do too well remotely. I can't see you on Zoom and get some hyperbaric oxygen. So for those watching this, you know, assuming they're in, a lot of them are probably in the United States or Western countries, how can they find a good hyperbaric therapist? And what should they look for? You know, if they're trying to interview or figure out who to go see for some of these more brain-related conditions.
I would look at their local, you know, now there's more and more hyperbaric centers. And, you know, look and see their training, how long they've been applying hyperbaric oxygen. And so you want to be able to ask those simple questions. And also, you know, making sure that there's no false claims being made of treatment conditions. The hyperbaric delivery only has 14 medically approved treatments that we can say, yes, this is a medical treatment for. If you do the lower pressure, then there's a 15th, it's called altitude sickness. So really it's getting the right education of application. And here's one where if you find that the clinic is, oh, I'll just schedule you in whenever, that's where I see a problem. I see that when I go to England a lot as well with some of the centers that they're only open on certain times. And so I'll talk to patients and they just fit in within the schedule. But it's like me giving you, let's say, a bottle of 40 pills, let's say metformin. And I say, take this twice a day, 500 milligrams twice a day, and take it for 20 days. Right. And if I see that bottle and 6 months later, you have 12 pills left, I know you haven't followed that. And it doesn't mean that that's not the right application. But most times when people are going in for hyperbaric and they're making that investment, it's that repetitive hyperbaric that has a lot of the benefits that you might see. Those physiological benefits are from that. And so.
So you sticking to that schedule is kind of an important part of the therapy.
Yeah, I don't prescribe off convenience. And I think it's easy to do that. And I see a lot of clinics that will do that because they're just like, hey, it's hyperbaric, just come in, right? So really understanding, we have a wealth of resources as well. They can go to my website, drzay.com. And also there's the application of home hyperbarics, where chambers can be done at a home under medical guidance and prescription for, I think, a month, and then they're sent back. There's a few manufacturers that will do that. And so there's different ways to access and apply hyperbaric. And it just depends on, you know, what's around in your area. And again, we have lots of resources, and there are free resources with our website, Hyperbaric Experts, latest research. You can search by the latest, or you can search by autism or cancer. And I rewrite it for the layperson to understand. And then it has the link for the hospital and the doctor and physician. So now everybody's sort of coming together, and it's a resource just for the community.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your wisdom. Please tell everybody one more time where they can find your stuff.
So I guess the best is the website DR and my first name ZAYD.com and DRZAY.com. And that has a whole hyperbaric section. And for practitioners, there's training and support. For home, there's lots of support, put it that way.
Beautiful. Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Z. Really appreciate you coming on.
You're welcome. Well, thank you for having me. And I hope the summit goes really well. And congratulations on what you're doing with the exposure of education and functional medicine. Thank you so much.